The pen of one Lionel Bart, a local man, shall we say, has written the story of Lionel Bart. It's a musical play. Simon, welcome. Simon Howling, welcome to the programme.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. Let's go right back to the beginning, because last time you were here, you were, I think you were managing a band. Not with me, but you came in on another programme. You were a man of many hats, shall we say.
Yeah, actually, it's connected to this. So I was managing a young pop band, and we were touring all over the country, and I didn't have, whilst I was looking after them, I didn't have a lot of time for myself to do something that I found really creative and everything else. So I read an article about Lionel Bart in the newspaper, which I found really interesting. And one night I decided I was going to have a go at writing a play about his life. And
Hang on. You just thought you'd write a play. Have you ever written a play before?
Never done anything like it before in my life.
So you just picked up a pencil and, these days a laptop. And you thought you'd write a play?
Yeah, I also direct TV programmes and documentaries and things. So I've always had a real interest in history and people in particular.
Yeah.
And with Lionel Bart, I went and found his house. There's a famous story about his house. He lived in this place called the Fun Palace in Fulham, and he used to throw these amazing parties. And I decided I was going to set this, the first half of this play, in this house, talking about how he's made all his money. And I went and found this house and sat outside the house till about 2 o'clock in the morning and wrote the first half of the play.
Wow.
In about 4 hours.
Wow.
That without being arrested by people thinking, what is this guy sat outside my house?
Because he was one of the larger-than-life characters of the 60s lifestyle, wasn't he?
Well, he did everything. So he started off writing sort of jingles and comedy songs for BBC for the Billy Cotton Show. And then after that, he managed to sort of befriend a load of people in the swinging 60s. So I used to go down to the famous Two Eyes Club in Carnaby Street, and that's the thing about that was there was people like, and he met, as you've just played, Tommy Steele, and his name then was Tommy Hicks, and Lionel found him, and they started writing together, and that was one of the big hits they wrote together.
See, I didn't know that. So he credited them with the discovery of Tommy Steele.
Yeah, no, and there's others. There's Cliff Richard. Cliff Richard has also followed off the back of Tommy Steele, and Lionel found him. And
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, wrote Living Doll in 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. So it was, and that's for me. The more I started digging, the more fascinating I found it, and then I found out how interesting his life was. So he'd made all this pop tunes, and anybody wanted to work in musicals, and he was having all this success with, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a minute. But and then he blew it all. And for me, that's it's a classic rise and fall story of somebody.
Okay.
Very interesting.
At the moment, it sounds similar vein to Dylan Thomas, a man with massive talent who again blew it all. So what did he, when you say blew it, what his behaviour, how he spent it, or his drinking,
well,
or?
He was from a very working class family. He's one of seven. He's from a family of tailors, Jewish tailors, down in Stepney. And he obviously had all the success. He was making what he was earning every minute, the average man was earning in a week. And he was earning that every minute at one point in the 60s.
Wow.
And he decided he would throw these parties weekly, and he would have everybody there from Princess Margaret through to the Beatles, through to the Rolling Stones, Barbara Windsor, loads of other people would all be there. Anybody that was anybody in the 60s would come and hang out at Lionel's house. And these parties at the time were costing the equivalent today of about £50,000 each. And he was throwing them every week. And as people did in the 60s, there was lots of, I think there was lots of drugs involved and booze and God knows what. But the big thing that he did where he lost all his money, he invested in one of his own shows that was a terrible show called Twang, which is all about Robin Hood. And yeah.
Twang. I've never heard of that, yeah.
The investors have pulled out of it. The directors pulled out of it. Lionel was completely off his, you know, off his face on something or other. And he decided he was going to fund it himself. And he basically ploughed, not only did he plough all the money he had, but he also ploughed all of the rights to his previous stuff, thinking he could do it all again anyway. And he sold them to Max Bygraves, of all people. for a very small amount of money. And it's very sad. It's a really sad story. And Max Bygraves, just a few years later, sold them for a hell of a lot more money than he bought them for.
I'm sure he did. Wow. Okay. So, what stage did he move from writing the pop songs to? Did he move into the musicals?
So they coincided alongside each other. I mean, I'm not going to give away all the songs that he did, because when you come to watch the show, I really love when I'm watching it. I love seeing people sort of gasping, thinking, "Oh my God, I didn't realise he wrote that," or "I didn't realise that." He wrote one of the James Bond theme tunes.
Nor did I till this morning. Nor did I. No.
So, and that's for me is a real testament to him, that there's a lot of stuff out there that he was doing all at the same time. So he's doing his pop stuff, and he started writing these musicals. And probably his most famous one, Oliver, that everybody knows. He came up with that idea just with a mate of his who's watching the film. He watched the film with. I've forgotten.
Alistair Sim.
That's the one.
Yeah.
He watched that back in the day and said, "Right, I'm going to write a musical about that one day." He never read the book.
He hadn't read the book.
No, he never did read the book. Just based the whole thing on that film.
Well, do you know? You're far too young, but I can remember. I think Oliver was 1964.
Yeah.
64. I can remember being taken by my parents. I would have been seven. That gives away. Yeah, 60 this year. Thank you. I can remember, and I think that was the first time I remember really going to a big West End cinema, and you've given a brochure.
Yes.
And that's the first time I saw the name Lionel Bart.
Just even with that, right, so the film, there's a really sad story that goes with that. So the film won Best Oscar for Best Picture, I think, and also Best Music in a Film. But that wasn't given to Lionel. Even though it's his songs, it was given to the guy that arranged the songs for the film. And so Lionel never actually got an Oscar for that.
Why? Why didn't he?
Because they're not his arrangements. So whoever arranges for the film back those days, it wasn't actually the songwriter. It was whoever did the music for the film itself. They win it. So, yeah, there's a lot of moments with him. And here's also the other really fascinating thing. While I've been doing this, I got introduced to Lionel's old PA, who happens to have kept everything. And there's a lock-up. Lovely Brenda has been given me access to all his personal photo albums, and I've had, you know, I can research every single part of the story. I've managed to find it from the real person who would know whether it's true or not true. And we've managed to feature that all in the show, which is great.
You must have had some fabulous not-trues.
yeah.
Well, tell about our fabulous true, then.
Oh, fabulous true. Well, there you go. The Oscar one is a good one. I think I find that really sad and a real shame. But, let me give you a lovely little juicy anecdote without swearing, because he swore a lot.
I'm sure he did.
You've put me on the spot now. I'll come back to that in a minute.
All right,
good story before we finish.
Okay, so, all right, then how long was the process from you from start to finish? Okay, it sounds like you've done an awful lot of research into this.
Yeah, well, it was only ever going to be a one-off. We did it. I decided to put it on at the Hippodrome in Leicester Square. So,
as you do.
Yeah. First time I've ever done anything. I've never directed anything like that before. And I thought, right, if I'm going to do it, in a good place. And we sold that out very quickly. And the people that came along astounded me. There was not only Lionel Bart's own family all rocked up, but we had people like Cameron McIntosh's office, various other people, you know, big showbizy people that I don't know that well, but they, you know, the theatre world, people were quite shocked, those people walking through the door. And it went down incredibly well. And then I decided to, it took me another year after that, to formalise it a little bit more, make it a little bit more dramatic. And we then put it on in Walthamstow. There's an old cinema there from the 1930s, and we converted that into a performance space, and we put it on for 5 days. And again, sold it out every single night, and again we had some huge people rocking up to watch that. And then now I decided, right, okay, we're going to take it up into bigger theatres, and so we're doing the Kenneth Moore in Ilford, and we're doing another place in Radlett, and then after that, in February next year, we go on a nationwide tour with it, which is, I've gone from never done anything before. Well,
so this has taken over everything then for you, really?
I juggle quite a lot of things to make it happen, yeah. But it's the good thing is it's something I have a passion for, so I'm quite enjoying it.
I was listening to Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber yesterday saying he's talking about the Palace Theatre, which encourages new musicals, because he said where Britain is falling behind now, that America there's like 40 new musicals a year, but over here there are very, very few. So they encourage people like yourself to come along, so they come and look at your work and see what they think of it and give it a review.
Yes.
And encourage you, etc. How difficult has that process been? You say you converted a theatre in Walthamstow, you booked the Hippodrome. How difficult was that physically to do? You must have had some financial backing to do that as well.
The answer to that is no, I didn't.
You didn't?
I've done it all myself, which is really stupid. but I've done it and... I think the interesting thing with myself is that I started out, when I first left school, I worked backstage in theatre, so I knew how to do lighting, I knew how to do sound. My life, I've done a lot of working in sort of performing industry, so I knew how to work with actors and actresses and where to find them and good people. Lots of favours I could pull in. And then I've also I tour with rock and roll tours and big name artists. I tour all over the world with them and do a lot of the visuals and visual stuff with that. So I could pull in lots of favours to make that happen. Mm. And I'm realistic enough as well to realise that if I'm going to put something on, I start with what I know I can do, so like that was just a one-off, and then we go from there and we build it from there, and we've been building it very slowly, but to the point now where we've got a big tour happening, which is crazy.
So this is a play, the music in the show is obviously Lionel's music, obviously, because
yes.
you're not a composer, are you?
No, I'm not. No. But we do have a live band on stage.
Yeah.
And we have a guy playing Lionel Bart. Now, the guy playing Lionel Bart is a guy called John Barr, and I've written it I always wrote it with him in mind. He's a great performer. I mean, he's what he hasn't done is probably easier to say what he has done, but he's done most of the West End shows, he's been around for a very long time, and we worked very closely together developing this story up, and he'd met Lionel a couple of times and he knew lots of people that knew Lionel very well, and we could really get some of those mannerisms across and make that work. And now it's as every time we've performed it, people that knew Lionel have always said, "Wow, you've really captured how Lionel was."
What did his family say?
I was really worried about them.
Yeah,
but, and also, I've grown very fond of Lionel. Now, there was a period of time when he was drinking and doing his drugs that he wasn't a particularly nice person.
Hmm.
But I wanted to honour him, and I think that's the one thing that has come across. All the family have just said, "Thank you." Thank you for keeping his memory alive, and thank you for doing this in Lionel's honour. And it's why wouldn't I? It's amazing.
He's worrying. Not really an example, a similarity, but it's the Brentwood Drama Festival next week. We've entered a play. I've directed it, and I've made a couple of subtle changes. It's an original work, and now I've just found out the author is coming. And I'm thinking, oh.
Yeah, but
is she going to go, "Oh, you've changed my play"? Or is she going to go, "Oh, it's really good"? I don't know. I'm nervous.
I would take that as an honour that they're coming. Yeah, it means they're interested enough in what you're doing. And that's the same with this, with having all the family rock up and having these old PAs rock up and having people that have performed in Lionel's shows all rock up. It means they're interested and they want to... They either loved him or they're interested to see what we're doing. And so far, we've had nothing but really good feedback.
Well, that's brilliant. And during your research, you must have spent hours just sitting on a floor somewhere, just going through paperwork, going through photographs, listening to people talking.
That's exactly how it is. Yeah, I've literally spent hours on floors going through all these old photo albums, and the set for the show we use a lot of video projection. So a lot of the photos are Lionel's original photos from his albums, and I've managed to find ones that match up to the whole story, and sort of we see that through, and it feels very personal when you're watching it. I've remembered that story, by the way.
Go on in. It's
just come to me. This is for me was also summed him up as a person. When he wrote Oliver, he had his opening night. He's a bit of a nervous wreck anyway. So he was sat in the front row with, or front rows, one of the front rows.
Yeah.
And he was sat with, funnily enough, Max Bygraves and a couple of other people. And a bit of scenery got stuck on the opening night. And he thought it was going to be a disaster. So he got up and he just ran out of the theatre. And he went down the road to another theatre where Barbara Windsor was performing another one of his musicals, Things Ain't What They Used To Be. And he sat in her dressing room. And then she said, Lionel, you better get back because the show's, your show's about to finish. You better get back. So he went back, and all he could hear was this sort of noise from inside the theatre, and he thought they were all booing. And he thought, oh, this is a disaster. And then he sort of crept in, and it was actually a standing ovation. But the standing ovation went on for 20 minutes. It's one of the longest ever standing ovations they've ever had in the West End for a musical. People just wouldn't stop.
Now you've done all this research, yeah. Do you think, if you can put his head on for a minute, do you think he realised how good he was?
No. Well, yes he did. But here's something else. He couldn't write music. He used to sing into a dictaphone.
Did he? He couldn't read or write music?
No. So even in his piano, he had numbers on the piano. And he would just sort of map out the tune single-fingered. And then he would get people in to write the music out for him. So one, the big, probably most well-known of those was a guy called Eric Rogers, who did all the music for the Carry On films.
Right.
So Eric used to write all his music out for him. And put it all into music form and note it all down. And but it was they're still Lionel's songs. He would just hum it to him and he'd come up with a melody.
Did he? What about the lyrics? Were they 100% his or
all very much all Lionel's? Yeah, he was very good with lyrics.
Well, as we see by some of the. Here's one of his songs.
Everyone, he's coming through the doors.
Oh no, that's the wrong one. That's the.
What one are we going to go with?
That was, hang on a minute, because that was the Young Ones version. I didn't want that one.
No, we don't want that one.
No, that was dreadful.
Well, you say that, but it kind of resurrected his career again.
I'll tell you what, let's... I know that we're going to... Let's have this one, because this was marvellous, and just takes us back, going back to the film.
Stop, I'm sure.
from the pen of the wonderful Lionel Bart. We're talking to Simon Hanning, the writer of a wonderful new production of The Story of Bart, The Story of Lionel Bart, joining me in the studio today. And we've talked about the man himself. Now, tell me about the show. How have you structured? You said you set the first part in this fun palace.
Yes.
Where have you gone from there?
So, it's basically this. It's two eras of his life. So the first half is the rise of Lionel, so they're going from the very beginning. He's in his fun palace and he's talking to the audience as if they're at one of his parties, and he explains through the songs and through some other guest performers that are there as well how he managed to become so successful and how he managed to make all his money. And then the second half, it becomes a little bit darker, and we're set 30 years later in his bed set, or it's not a bedsit, it's quite a nice flat actually, but a flat in Acton. But it's very different to the big fun palace that he had, which was this huge, vast, ridiculous house in Chelsea. The flat in Acton was set there, and he talks about how he's lost all his money, and he talks about the mistakes he made and some of the things he did to make him lose that money, really, and some of the stupid decisions he made, there is a nice end to the whole thing. It's not all doom and gloom. He died in 1999, but yeah. He didn't die in complete poverty, at least, because Cameron McIntosh very kindly cut him back in on the rights to Oliver that Cameron McIntosh had rebought, and it was one of the nicest things that, you know. Lionel was ecstatic about that, and it meant he was actually having a share again in the new revival that happened at the Palladium at the time. Lionel had a share in his greatest piece of work, I suppose.
It was his. He was a child of the 60s. He was a victim of, I suppose, that whole lifestyle, and it was so easy, and so many did fall into that trap, didn't they, of the drink and the drugs and the uppers and the downers and etc. And did he? Did he ever really properly recover from that, do you think?
Well, he was never bitter. That's the interesting thing. He was never bitter about what happened. He knew he'd made a few stupid errors and mistakes, and he was very trusting. He was very nice and very kind to a lot of people. So, did he regret it? It's hard to say. I think from all the interviews and all the people I've spoken to, I don't think he ever regretted anything. I think he had a great life.
Well, that's great. And in this technological age, was there is there much film evidence? Have you seen? Are there many interviews? Did he do Parkinson or any stuff like that?
There was a couple in later life. Not an awful lot earlier on. And interestingly enough, I'd never seen inside the Fun Palace up until 2 days ago. I got sent this little film from Granada TV, and it was a very short 5-minute segment all about Lionel Bart in his house in the Fun Palace.
Wow.
And that was skin went, yeah, tingly and everything. It's really cool to see that.
It doesn't. You said you sat on the steps, but I presume it's just somebody's private house now, is it?
I've knocked on that door about four times and nobody's ever answered. It's one of those, I think, listen, if the house had a value now, it'd be in multi-millionaires territory. I doubt they're going to open the door to little old me knocking the door. Like, who
they never know. you never know. We ought to do a documentary on you finding out how you went around.
Yeah.
I
did the same thing with the house, the flat in Acton. And the interesting thing about that was we knocked on the door there because I thought, basically the guy that's playing Lionel Bart, I took him around to all the different places. Mm. And we knocked on the door of the Acton flat. And unbeknown to me, the guy answering the door was Lionel's nephew. He'd been left the house in his will.
Ah.
And he invited us up into the kitchen area, which is where I've set the second half. And the piano and everything else is all there that Lionel wrote all the songs on. And that was a moment and a half.
Oh. Absolutely.
To be sat in that kitchen, yeah, his nephew now is Sammy, but to sit there in the kitchen that I've set the second half of a play that was a fictitious thing in my head that I knew nothing about, but actually I think I pictured it pretty well. That was quite a moment, really. I was there for a good couple of hours.
One stunning flaw I could see, I could see early on in your plan, that you said you wrote it with John in mind. What if John had said no?
Listen, well, John won't mind me telling you, there was all sorts of people. If John had said no, there was all sorts of big named actors I was going to approach, which I won't name, but they were pretty big stars, actually.
Well, lookalikes, I can only, off the top of my head, I only think of Ian Hendry, but...
It doesn't matter. But these are all people that would have put bums on seats, definitely, for sure. But what I think what we have done by doing what we've done up till now is we've made that Lionel the star. There was no need to have a huge, massive star name to get people to come and watch the thing. I think if I had gone down that road, I think it would have taken away from Lionel.
Yeah, I mean, there have been other attempts to depict his life, isn't it? There was a production at the Queen's, I think, back in 2003, which I can't remember what that was called now, but yours looks like it's set for success. You've already had success already. So what's the plans going forward? You're at the Kenneth Moore now from 7th and the 8th of October.
Yeah, so we've got two shows on the 7th of October, Saturday afternoon and a Saturday evening, and then the Sunday, the 8th of October. And then after that, we move to Radlett in Hertfordshire. And then come February and March, we're touring all over the UK, including Northern Ireland and loads of different places. But for round here, 7th and 8th of October in Kenneth Moore is probably the nearest one in Ilford. And I'm hoping I'm going to keep John Barr across all... In fact, I know I will. He now loves this show so well, the guy that's playing Lionel. And he's so brilliant. I'd hazard a guess he'd find a better part to play. He's so good at it. And... I'm hoping we'll be running this for many moons to come.
Fantastic. With the ultimate goal is, I suppose, moving into a West End theatre, I suppose.
That is, it's a possibility, yeah. It's something we are looking at.
Good. Now, what worries me is that you're going to be sitting in lots of hotel rooms across the country. You're going to have a laptop on your lap. What's next for you?
Well, there's a couple I've already started.
Jerry, his dad's in the corner.
Interesting. There was one I wanted to do as a TV or film documentary, and that was about Steve Marriott from The Small Faces. I think his life is really interesting. And then I've another sort of musical play idea I've got is based on George Michael, I won't get that into too much information yet. But it's
that's crying out to be made, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's no way I could get anyone to play George Michael, so that it's got to just feature him.
It's a new programme starting. Is it tomorrow night on ITV? What's it called? Do they look alike as much as...
Yes. Yeah, I do know the show. Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called now, but are they as good as the real
That's
thing?
That's the real thing, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. The George Michael looked good there, so there's your man. Right, so this show is at the Kenneth Moore. Tickets available on 028553 4466, and obviously kmtheatre.co.uk is the website. Simon, I just think this is a brilliant thing to do. This is an iconic man. For me, he's up there with his lyrics. You know, people can say, well, yeah, he's a bit Chas and Dave of the modern Lionel Bart, almost to a degree, because, it's sort of that East End, Cockerill White Governor, that sort of thing. But I think he's up there with Dylan Thomas and the same sort of background story. Was he lucky in love?
Well,
there's another story.
That is another story. He was, well, back in the 60s, obviously you weren't publicly allowed to be homosexual, so he was, and he kept that part of his life very, very quiet, really.
And well, he did, because I didn't know that.
No, put it like this, in his fun palace, he had a sauna built into his bedroom through the wardrobe doors.
Right, okay.
You can imagine what's went on in there.
Yeah, okay.
That's neither. He was very, very. To the outside world, people wouldn't have known. He had people like Alma Cogan on his arm, Judy Garland he'd have on his arm quite often. He started managing at one point. I think people weren't really. He wasn't very public about that at all, not until much later in his life when he came out of the closet at that point.
No, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
Or care. But a wonderful story. I wish the production all the very, very best.
Thank you
very
much.
It's going to be absolutely fantastic.
We've got a great cast. They're all proper West End performers. We've got Jodie Jacobs, and we've got John Barnes, as I said, the lead guy. We've got a brilliant musical band led by a guy called Noam Galperin. And they're all, you know, they wouldn't normally be doing something in sort of smaller provincial theatres, but they all love Lionel just as much as we do. So,
Simon, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been great. Come back and see us in the near future and tell us how things are going and how your next projects are going as well.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you. Let's end then with a number from the pen of Lionel Bart.
Consider yourself at home. Consider yourself one of the family. We take it to you so strong. It's clear we're going to get along. Consider yourself.